Hi everyone, I'm Joanna and this is Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen. I'm really pumped today because I have a very special guest. Jenny isn't here, but I have a new friend, Jimena Sariñana. She started her career when she was just a kid. She was in movies and telenovelas, including the iconic Luz Clarita. I can't say it without singing it. Since then, she's become an incredibly prolific singer-songwriter with 5 albums, Grammy nominations. And I'm honestly just can't wait for her to become my friend over the course of this interview. Jimena, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Joanna. That's a very nice intro.
So I'm gonna be real with you. I have a writing playlist on Spotify, and you're all over it. Like I literally get the N. There's only like 6 songs in rotations at a time when I'm writing, and Get the N is one of them. And I feel like I'm meeting someone that's been part of my day to day life. So I'm a little starstruck, I have to be honest.
Thank you. Well, that's the beauty about music, that it kind of like lives away from yourself. Like once the song is out, it kind of like becomes a part of the, I guess, you know, cultural reality, and it's not, you know, it stops being a song about you. And, you know, Right. Every person that listens to the song or that has a relationship to the song, they kind of give it their own meaning. And it's just really interesting. But yeah, I totally know the feeling. I was reading an interview about Bjork this morning, and like reading like her, I don't know, just, you know, her interview or like her answers, it feels like I've known her and like I've grown with her while I've been listening to all of her albums. So yeah, it's like a very strange feeling. Of course, I've never met Bjork. Of course, you know, to have no idea what she's like.
Well, we can pretend that she's here right now. I love her voice.
Exactly. I love her voice too. But, you know, yeah, that's the thing about music, that you kind of feel an intimate connection to the person that is singing the song, even though you've probably, you know, you come from very different backgrounds and different worlds.
Yeah, there's something really guttural about music. Like, I'm a comedian, and it's kind of difficult to separate the comedian from their work because it comes from their voice. Like, okay, maybe someone can imitate a bit or whatever, but it's very inextricably linked to the person. And music, I love what you're saying, because music has this other element. It becomes whatever the person interprets it as, like poetry.
Yeah.
And it's very guttural. It hits differently. Like with comedy, it's like, you know, you intellectualize a lot of things about it. You have to understand a lot of groundwork for, you know, a satire to make sense. And then there's music. And like, I love music. I don't know the first thing about the rules of music, but music makes me cry and music makes me laugh and music makes me feel things. I can't explain to you why, but I do.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I find what you said really interesting about people taking your work and having it sort of, it's no longer yours. It becomes a piece of everyone that listens to it. And you started your career really young, and you started in I'm not going to sing it this time, and you started in Luz Clarita. And, you know, as a kid being perceived as, you know, this villain in this telenovela, it must have been a really difficult thing for you to take ownership of like who you are again.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I had such a conscience of what was really going on with Luz Clarita. Because, you know, we've got to remember that this is way before the internet, way before social media. So if you weren't a kid, you know, that watched a lot of TV or news, or which, you know, obviously I wasn't. I wasn't, you know, watching news about soap operas or whatever. It was all kind of just a strange like rumor that I would hear now and then of like, oh, you know, Luz Clarita, the song, you know, they play it in, you know, in stadiums in Brazil before, you know, a soccer match.
Oh my God, I didn't know this.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Like when they told me, it was like, what, really? Like now that I've you know, that I'm a little bit more conscious of what of the huge impact that telenovelas had on, you know, on culture in different countries. Like I kind of understand like how huge and famous me and Daniela were was, you know, mm-hmm. Los Clarita. Mm-hmm. But growing up, you know, I was 10 years old. You know, I went to a pretty normal school with, you know, other kids who probably didn't watch telenovelas. So it was kind of like just a pretty normal upbringing. And it, I think it really helped that both my parents, they were in the industry, so they knew really well what the implications of that were. And they always were like, you know, the only thing that you need to do is study and go to school. Like, this is a hobby. Right. And, you know, if you want to continue doing it, you have to, you know, get good grades and, you know, and, you know, we're not going to stop our lives. Like I would see a lot of people or a lot of kids and, you know, that started acting really young, you know, that their whole family started revolving around that kid's income or whatever. My parents were like, you know, that's never going to happen. It's like we have two more kids other than you that, you know, also have their own dreams and also have their own things that they want to do. And, you know, this is a hobby. It's not your job. Mm-hmm. So I think that really helped in order for me to grow up grounded and, you know, kind of like I had just like a normal sense of being a kid, you know? So I think that was really positive.
Oh my God. That's amazing because how you sort of came out of it, for Americans, I feel like it's difficult to really express the importance of the telenovela culturally. But, you know, they understand the concept of, you know, Ryan Gosling and Christina Aguilera and Justin Timberlake, they began as child actors and then sort of went into stardom.
Yeah.
For an American, like, to think that a telenovela that does the same thing, can do the same thing for its actors and its child actors is something that like blows their mind, I think.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it happens as often. And I also think what I think is very interesting about your career is the telenovela aspect feels like a fun fact about you, not like, oh, that's where she came from. Like, you know, so it almost feels like a trivia question versus like, oh, this is her
essence or yeah.
Her essence. Yeah. So your first album was titled Mediocre, correct?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I'm a comedian too. No, just kidding.
Self-deprecation. It runs deep with Latinas.
Yes, it does. Well, I think I really like to sort of come up with, I don't know, once the album is nearly done, I start looking at you know, possible themes that are like reoccurring. And I think one of the things being at my first album that I was really concerned about was not necessarily not making it, but not standing out, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, that it would be just something that would just, you know, come out and nobody would talk about it, and you know, that I wouldn't be successful, that I wouldn't be able to continue with a music career. And in general, it was something that I was struggling a lot as a teenager or post teenager, of being like, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to be one of the bunch, you know. I kind of want to And I don't want my feelings to be just normal. You know, I want my feelings to be really extreme, and I want to have like a very interesting life. And I want to, you know, be recognized by the kind of music that I'm doing, and I want to be unique. And I think that was why there was a lot of songs that struck that chord in me. And so Mediocre, also it being the first song in the album, and it being, I think, the first song that I wrote completely on my own, and that came like a flash of lightning, you know, like a huge like eureka and inspiration moment. And I kind of wrote that song like really quickly, you know, it came through like in 20 minutes or something. So it was like a really special song to me as well. So I think, you know, all those things just made it like the right title for me.
you compare your first album title and then your last album title, Donde Bailarán Las Niñas, and tell me a little bit about why you chose that title.
Well, Donde Bailarán Las Niñas, it's kind of a play also in like an important title in Mexican music, like pop music history. There was an album by Maná called Donde Jugarán Los Niños, which was a really famous album, and I listened to that album nonstop when I was growing up. Then Molotov, the band, they came out with kind of like a satirical play on that title, and they named one of their albums Donde Jugarán Las Niñas.
Oh my God.
And Donde Jugarán Las Niñas was very like transgressive for that time, but it was also very sexist.
Oh, really?
Well, just because, you know, the album cover was, you know, a like a schoolgirl. You couldn't see her face. It was just like the her skirt and her panties.
Oh, cool. A faceless, pantied schoolgirl. I wonder where the sexism lies. And where can it be? We must search for it.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Molotov guys and they're really sweet guys, but you have to kind of understand the context of that album. You know, that album was very, it came out at a time where you couldn't really say a lot of things, where, you know, there wasn't really a use of bad words like in music or anything, that there was a lot of like fear of speaking up against the government, of speaking up against the status quo. So that album, you know, was very important for Mexican music because it you know, they spoke out against the police, against the government, against, you know, and they used swear words and that kind of thing. And that was like, oh my God, like I remember they in schools, you know, schools would tell, you know, the kids' parents, like, You shouldn't let your kids listen to Molotov, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they will become the devil. Yeah,
of course. And we loved that album. You know, that album is such a huge part of my tween years or whatever. But of course, you know, the the name and the cover of the album is something that, you know, now it's just takes on a different context. So when I did Donde Bailarán Las Niñas, it was kind of like my girly play on this title. And for me, it was a little bit of like a reflection of where are these places where girls growing up can simply be free and be themselves and dream of, you know, of a world where being a girl or being a woman is not something that's going to limit you, but something that, you know, that you can dream of being whatever you want. And that's obviously something that I want for my girl, and I want for every girl in Latin America and in the world to be able to have, you know, the same opportunities as men. And it was kind of that, you know, it's like a very feminine album. And I think it really was the first step of me getting very involved in kind of that world and that topic and that cause.
Well, you know, the world of music, the world of comedy, they're still, you know, male dominated worlds. And I remember at the beginning of my career, I was really, really, really afraid of my femininity because I was afraid that people would perceive me immediately as not funny or not, you know, strong or not witty, not sarcastic. So, you know, for a lot of the beginning of my career, if you look at my videos from my first few years, I specifically would like dress very masculine. I would try and limit my softness. And when I look back, I like cringe a little bit because throughout the years, it's like an internal struggle of like, I am proud of being a woman. I really am. It's influenced so much of me. I also kind of resent it at times, and I struggle with it simultaneously. So it's this thing where it's like I'm proud of it. I'm happy I am it. I'm also, you know, torn about it, which I don't think men really think about their gender.
Never.
I think about being a woman all the time. It's like, oh my God, if I were a man, would this be different? And I, from what you're talking about and your art and your music, it seems like you've been through a transformation of, let me embrace the side of me and not be afraid of it.
No, 100%. I think it's definitely something that we all struggle because, like you said, I think femininity or our feminine side, at least in music, it was also kind of something that you wanted to hide so as not to be perceived as a certain type of artist. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it seemed like women that used their feminine side for music were mostly in like the plastic pop, world. And I really wanted my music to be perceived as not that. But one of the things that I love about the music industry now, especially in Latin America, is just, you can have like really, really sexual women exploiting that part of themselves, you know, like they like embracing it and being like, you know, fuck everyone, this is who I am, and still be in control of their careers and in control of their art and have like a very alternative approach to music. Doesn't really matter what genre they do. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I love that about how far we've come and about just how the representation in every aspect of the music industry nowadays.
Yeah, I've seen the cultural shift and how empowerment is at the core of it, and whatever women decide to do, whether it be singing WAP or, you know, singing about heartbreak or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's up to them. It doesn't feel like it's pushed upon them by the industry. I feel like when it's authentic, it feels like empowered.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, because I feel like every artist has their creative machinations, like the way that they sit down and force themselves to be creative. Creativity, I feel, is such a fickle thing. It's really difficult to grasp. How do you go about writing and making your songs? Like, do you have a trick? Do you listen to music? Like, what do you do to be inspired? Because I might need to steal some of these tips, because you've done a lot in your career.
Well, I definitely think that we artists are like sponges. Mm-hmm. The more you see, the more you hear, the more you travel, the more you read, the more you talk to people, and the more experience that you have in general, like in every aspect of life, the more things you're going to connect together. And I think that's what makes us creative, or that's what makes us original. Mm-hmm. Because all the information is out there, but it's how we connect the dots between certain things, or, you know, or certain metaphors, or you and in your comedy, you know, how a thing happens and, you know, it can just, you know, go by unnoticed, but just the way that you perceive it and the way you connect the dots in order to make a joke about it. Well, that's what makes it unique, and that's what makes your art unique. And then, of course, you know, when it comes to actually like sitting down and writing, I'm just a huge procrastinator. So I need to make myself I know myself, and I also know ways to go around myself. So I know that I'm really good at blocking out time and maybe going somewhere, like traveling away from home, and just for 2 weeks or for a month, just write. And it usually has to come with doing a couple of writing sessions as well, because, you know, then I kind of force myself to really have something to show, because, you know, you're going to be working with someone else, so you got to make it work.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I know myself. enough to kind of trick myself into doing what I need to do, you know?
I trick myself all the time. I'll be like, you know what? Collaborate with someone so that you have to be held accountable. Like, it's not just up
exactly.
to you. Or like, you know, put a date on. I'll be like, oh, the script will definitely be ready by Tuesday. Yeah, for sure. And I'm like, I haven't even started, but I'm like, the intense pressure I feel will force me to actually be productive.
Yes, that works.
It does. It really does. Being your fight or flight reflex, like you feeling like complete and utter anxiety really does make for creative content.
Yeah, it really does.
And for you, what is a, I know this feels kind of like a song they would ask you on one of those 2-minute interviews on a radio, but what has been, and you don't have to pick one, but out of your songs,
yeah,
which one would you say, because I think favorite and most proud of is probably different, but which one do you think you feel most proud of? And why?
Well, usually there's like, I really like songs that you imagine how you want them to sound like, or you have like a like an intention from the very get-go of what kind of song you want it to be. And then when you achieve it and you hear the end of it, you hear it at its, you know, at its end, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is exactly what I was imagining. I think that's very special when you achieve that. And in my last album, which is Amor Adolescente, I love the title track. I love Amor Adolescente just because it was that kind of song that I wanted to write. I was like, we need a song that doesn't have a specific structure. I want the song to be named, you know, to have the name of the album. And I have this poem that I wrote, and I kind of want, just really want it to fit the poem right into the music and not really think about melody that much, or think about if it rhymes or if it, or if it's catchy, like it doesn't matter. You know, I just want it to sort of want to musicalize this poem and see where it takes us. And I'm really proud of that song. But I think every album and every period of your life, or every album has kind of like that song or that moment that, you know, you're most proud of something, and then it just goes, it starts changing. I also really like the fact that songs that you wrote like 5 or 10 years ago, sometimes when you play them again or when you hear them again, you understand certain things that you were trying to do that you weren't, they weren't really clear. That was just like an intuition that you were following. And then suddenly, you know, 5 years later, you hear it and it's like, oh my God, I totally understand like what I was trying to say. Like, it makes even more sense now. It's kind of like, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm kind of an oracle of myself. Like, what the hell?
Well, we started out this interview talking about how your songs, when you're making them, are yours. And then you put them out there in the ether, and they're not, it's not no longer yours. It's everyone else's interpretation. And I think it's funny that your past and present self, like your present self has taken up your past self songs and has made it, yeah, like has reinterpreted, like time hopping, dimension hopping.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I have songs that I wrote when I was 15 years old. It's like, what did I know when I was 15? Like, nothing. You know, I still had Barbie dolls probably when I was 15. Like, I wasn't like, I wasn't even close to being like a developed adult or teenager even at 15. And I was writing about things that sometimes I hear them now and I'm like, wow. I had a good idea about what this was going to be about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to me.
I've always wanted to ask musicians this because I remember younger buying an album, and because mm-hmm. that's what you would buy. You'd buy a CD and just listen to it from beginning to end, and it sort of told a story. Mm-hmm. And I think albums to this day still tell a story. They're albums. But with how we consume music now, which is like the single mm-hmm. and this song is hitting, and even TikTok that's like cutting up songs into 15-second pieces and viralizándose in that way. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about how you feel about it and if you think this is something that you have to adapt to or it's just like a fad.
I think I totally believe in adaptation. I think it just didn't happen as quickly as it's happening now. That's the crazy thing, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Nowadays, you talk about 10 years ago, and it has nothing to do with the way people listen to music or like which platforms are popular now with what was popular, you know, with social media, what was popular 10 years ago. And it's just insane the velocity that everything is taken. It's just so, it moves so fast and so quick. But I always think, I've always felt that format, well, like technological advances and formats have always influenced the way we musicians write. Like, because the album is kind of like the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the amount of music that fit into the two sides of, you know, of a vinyl. And then mm-hmm. it was, you know, the amount of songs that you're able to fit into a CD. And I remember that at one point in my career, when CDs were the thing, I think I remember record labels just couldn't fathom the idea of you wanting to put more music after releasing an album. It's like you forcefully had to wait at least a couple of years if you wanted to release more music, because record labels were like, you're going to distract your audience. Like, you have to give the album time for people to buy it and listen to it. And I always felt that was kind of limiting because I wanted to do so many things and like write so many new music. And then I had friends that were, you know, continuously recording and writing and you know, and feeling like, damn it, I have all this music and I'm not able to put it out. And now, you know, it seems like people can't have enough of new music. It's like once you put out an album, a month later, everyone's like, okay, so when's the next single? And you're like, wait, just give me a second.
Can I give me one moment, please?
Yeah. So I think that it all depends on how you, on where you're at and how you're feeling. I think it can be very liberating. And I love that about nowadays, you know, cause 10 years ago, people were like, you can't be collaborating with all those people. Mm. And now it's like, you know, I can collaborate with whoever I want to. And, you know, people are just happy that there's new music on the way.
You know, I recently learned about the art of sampling. And just to go to your point of how art transforms and sort of evolves in its time, and how sampling is, you know, the art of taking existing music and evolving it, transforming it, changing it to then be a new song, to have a different, you know, a different life.
Yeah.
Kanye was like, you know, the king of this. And I see it a lot now in just all content. It's like, mm-hmm. it's what we've been talking about this whole conversation, like songs existing even on social platforms, obtaining like a completely different meaning.
Yeah.
And I think it's powerful. It's also like intense. It's what you're saying. Like the past few years, it feels like we're in a revolution of how art is consumed, but also how art is repurposed.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and it's also like a little scary because I don't know, now I feel old. You know, I'm like, oh my God, it, like, holy moly, like this one chorus in this song is now about like revealing your teenage dirtbag self with like old pictures. Like now it's, you know, but I'm interested to see where the music, you know, world moves to and how you continue to create work for it.
I think you have to find a balance as an artist or as a creator. I mean, it's good to have your ears open and and be aware of what's going on. And, you know, and yeah, sure. I mean, be in TikTok and listen to songs because they're huge on TikTok. And you know, and if you want to create something from that mindset, I think, you know, I think that's totally fine. But also, mm-hmm. if you feel overwhelmed by it and you feel like, you know what, I can't be bothered with creating something right now because everything just seems like it's going and moving way too fast, I think that's okay,
yes,
too.
And
I really think that's okay. Yeah. And I think that one of the big lessons that I think we're learning as a society is, you know, to kind of respect everyone and everybody's processes and, you know, be more aware of people's mental health and more aware of, like, you know, how you feel about certain things and, you know, that it's not okay to expect everyone to be moving at the same rhythm and space.
Nice.
And yeah, and I think that's definitely a positive thing that's happening with society.
And speaking about society, look at this flawless transition into my next question. I watched the music video for your song Diva, which I absolutely loved. It seemed like you had a very specific point of view. You were very tongue-in-cheek and you were very puntada at what your point was. Can you describe to me what went through your head and why you wanted to make this song and this music video specifically?
Well, my first album is very kind of, I use a lot of metaphor. You're not really sure, like, who I'm talking about or what I'm talking about. And I think I kind of wanted it that way. But as I grow older and I'm more comfortable with who I am, more honest about, you know, my background or my story or whatever, I'm really liking exploring with being a lot more, I guess, graphic in my songs and just, you know, for people to kind of understand exactly what it is that I mean or what it is that I'm coming from. And even, you know, being very, very, very autobiographical. And Diva is very, I guess it's my most autobiographical song because mm-hmm. it talks about what other people, other peers, or then, you know, moving to a bigger circle, like what the press has said about me, what trolls have said about me in social media. And I kind of just used all that and turned it into a song. So I kind of make a little fun about myself and a little fun as to what other people have called me or what have said about me and my music and me as an actress. And it was just really to have fun. And we had a lot of fun writing it. And I invited Tessa, because Tessa, yeah, she's a really talented singer-songwriter. I love her music. She's she's 10 years younger than me, so she's from another generation. But I think our experiences are very similar because she's also a child actress. She has a really prolific mm-hmm. acting career. You know, she's everywhere. She's doing a lot of stuff as an actress. And still, like, even 10 years with that, like, age difference, they still question, like, her motives, or they question, you know, if she's, if she's able to be a singer and an actress. She also gets compared, like, to me and to other alternative Mexican singers, and she's like, hey, what the hell? You know, like, why would anyone do that? It's like, we're so different.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I think she was perfect for co-writing this song with.
It was great. It was great. And you know, the word diva is so interesting because it's both a powerful word and then a word with a lot of negative connotation. Like,
yeah,
Madonna's a diva, but then it's like, oh, she was acting like such a diva. And I think that duality is something that I find that you're like, you repurpose as like the strength of the word diva, while singing about being like about divaness, which, you know, what's crazy. So I don't know if you know this fun fact, the word, and excuse my language, but the word bitch
mm-hmm.
if you look at its usage throughout history, the peaks of the point of usage are usually around the times where women were trying to obtain more rights. So around the, you know, women's suffrage, the sexual revolution, recently with Me Too. And, you know, these words that are meant to destroy women also are, have a point of power to them. Like, hey, like I use the word bitch, like badass bitch.
Yeah.
And how we we repurpose these words and give them the power they deserve versus the negative connotation that society tends to put on them.
Yeah, 100%. And I totally think that was kind of like the idea behind diva, because, you know, my peers, when we were in high school, that's what they would call me in, you know, with a negative connotation, because I was, you know, constantly away from school, acting or whatever, and I couldn't be bothered with school subjects because I already knew that I wanted to be an actress and, you know, be a musician. So my peers would always, you know, make fun of me, calling me a diva, like, oh, she didn't do her homework because she's such a diva, or, you know, she's not coming to school because she's a diva or whatever. And then it's like, well, if that means that I am able to do what I do, and if that means that, you know, I'm not one of the bunch, oh, I guess that then that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I got to say, I'm going to start calling myself a diva too. And you know what? Jenny, my co-host, is a diva because she couldn't make it because she's on set. So Jenny's a diva.
Great diva.
Ximena, I really, really appreciate this conversation. I've learned so much. I really wish you all the luck in the world. I can't wait to see all the amazing things you do and that you act in, that you create, that you perform. And I hope to see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this conversation. It was a lot of fun.